Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is Brian.
This is Daryl.
And one, we apologize for this being late. We are recording this actually on Sunday, July 9th at 8:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time because we wanted to talk about The Sound of Freedom this week, and it took us a little while to see it. So thank you for putting up with this being a day late. And D, how you doing?
I'm better now. It's been a couple hours.
Yeah, I've had a day. I mean, I've had almost a whole 24 hours to sit with this. So yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about this. Real quick, before we get into the movie too much, this box office news, Indiana Jones is at $121 million after 2 weeks. That's domestic, which is awful. It's sitting at 247 globally right now, almost 248. And it still has another $100 million to go before it makes its budget. And that's just equaling the budget.
So what you're saying is it's not doing too well.
No, it's really not. I mean, this movie might make $400 million. It might. I'm talking about Indiana Jones. But like looking at The Flash fell all the way to number 12 this week. It's sitting at 261 after a month.
Yeah, it comes on, or did it already? No.
No, not yet.
I think next week.
The 16th is when it hits VOD. So
yeah.
I don't know when it hits Max.
Yeah, that's when I'll be watching it.
Yeah, it hits Max. I mean, I'll watch it on Max because I've already paid for Max for the month for that. So, yeah. You know, there's that. As far as the weekend goes, Insidious, Red Door, $32.7 million. It made its entire production budget back at 16 or just under 16 million. And The Sound of Freedom for the weekend made 18.2 million. It's sitting, it's only been released domestically. It's sitting at 40 and it's in the red or in the black now. It's in profit.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. And it was on less than 3,000 theaters. In less than 3,000 theaters. So.
Yeah, and they were also, I don't know if you saw, but I mean, Dana White even put out a video on this, but yeah, Caviezel talks about it at the end of the movie.
Right.
I've seen stuff before. I actually went, I don't know where, I think it was maybe an Instagram ad where it took me to the Angel Studios where you could have gotten tickets for free if you want it.
Yeah. Yeah, because they don't want it to be, you know.
Yeah, like you said.
Cost prohibitive.
Yes. So, I mean, I don't have any numbers, but guess I don't think a lot of people probably did that.
No,
but you know, there are some people that probably did. So, right.
Yeah. But anyway, all right. So let's go ahead and just hop right in. So just kind of trigger warnings, whatever. We're gonna spoil the movie. It's based on a true story. So, and it's been out there. This isn't like new news. But there is obviously we are going to talk about human trafficking. And one thing to know about this movie, just up front, is this movie is not graphic. I mean, it is a unflinching look at human trafficking. But, you know, in the hands of these filmmakers, it is not graphic. It's almost worse, you know, in a way. Mm-hmm. But there is no, you know, it's not cuties. They're not actually sexualizing these children.
Yes.
So, so there's that. So if that's a concern, you know, that is something you don't have to worry about. I think the other thing, just on a personal note, I'm probably going to take my teenager to see this weekend or this week. Mm-hmm. Just because this is so prevalent and where we live, you know, actually human trafficking, serial killers, like, because we live on the 71 spine that runs from Canada to Florida. There's a lot of that stuff. So I feel like this is something, if you have, especially a teenage daughter, this movie is probably something you should go to see with them and then have a discussion afterwards about situational awareness and, you know, how to tell if something's wrong and how to tell, you know, if something seems off. Just real quick, like, you know, a story I have is a couple of years ago, we were walking around a store, and I was just, you know, I try and give her freedom. You know, I keep my eye on her the whole time. She's never out of my sight. But there was a man who was following her around. And he started to close the gap on him, and I watched, and, you know, I was close, and, you know, he started to walk up to her, and I put my hand on his shoulder, and I asked him what he was doing. And I kindly told him if he took another step towards my daughter, he was going to come out of there in pieces. So, you know, there's that. But this was definitely someone who was, you know, up to no good, because he immediately left the store.
Yeah.
So, and I am not a tough guy. I'm not saying this like as a brag or anything like that. This is something that as dads, specifically dads, need to be aware of with their children in public. You do not have to be tough. You do not have to look tough. You just have to make sure that anybody who wants to mess with your kids knows that you're watching and knows that you are paying attention to your children.
Yeah.
And that is the thing that they cannot take away, and they will not have access to your kids.
I will go one further. Men in general, because this is a society that permeates the lie of toxic masculinity. Men have to start behaving like men, and that includes protecting those. It does. Yes, when you have a child, or when you have someone who is close to you that is a kid, whether it be a niece or a nephew, you absolutely look out for them. At the same time, if you're out somewhere and you see, because I've actually seen video, and you've seen videos of this, where somebody has no dog in the hunt, but they see something going on with a guy like you're talking about, and maybe the parent or guardian is not paying attention, and that child gets taken, and this stranger intervenes. I've seen plenty of videos about that. As we as men need to continue to step up and ignore what the media says about us as being this toxic masculinity trait, because like you said, it's not about being tough. It's about being a good person and doing the right thing. And when you're confronted with something that's evil like that, you step up to the plate. You step in front of it.
Right. You're right. You know, but I mean, we look at, like, just kind of, not to get political or to get too deep into the weeds there, but you look at what's happening in New York. You had Daniel Penny, who was a former Marine, who subdued a man with two other men on the subway, who was threatening and attacking people. That man died at the hospital later. You know, they're not going to talk about the extenuating circumstances of drugs and things like that. But now he's being charged. I believe it's manslaughter, but
I think it's manslaughter. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just one of those things that, like, they want us to be afraid to protect each other.
Yes.
And we have because to not give that up.
People that are afraid, you know what they do. They're easily manipulated, as well as they look to a higher power as in government to help save them.
Yeah. Daddy government's not coming to save you.
Yes.
So, but yeah. All right. So let's hop into this. So this is the, okay, so one more thing about the background of this film. 20th Century Fox had secured the rights to distribute this film 5 years ago. And then when Disney bought 20th Century Fox, they put it on the shelf. It's definitely, you know, has nothing to do with the fact that there are multiple child trafficking charges brought to Disney employees annually.
Yes, and that's inarguable.
You know, it is not the fact that you look at what Disney does to their own child actors and how they break them. Case in point, Britney Spears. With the stuff with her and the basketball player over the weekend. You know, anyone who sits on this, like, I feel is complicit. I told you before we started, after Jen and I went and saw this, like, I literally drove to the liquor store and bought a bottle of whiskey. And I don't drink, you know, like, I'm not a drinker anymore. Like, I haven't been for, I mean, I never really was, but, like, you know me, like, if I do have a drink, it's one, and it's like maybe three times a year. And it's just like, I, like you said, you sat in the car and had to get right. Like we talked about, like, this is a powerful movie, much like The Passion, much like Requiem for a Dream. I think Trainspotting was another one where I kind of sat in the car and was like, what the hell? Pie. You know, Darren Aronofsky is obviously a theme there with two of those. but yeah, so this is the movie that tells the story of Tim Ballard, who was a CIA, and then he was brought into the Department of Department of Homelander Security. So he was an agent and an operator undercover for Homeland Security, where he worked on arresting pedophiles. And one of the issues that they ran into is they were prosecuting these people for having images and you know whatnot, but they weren't finding the children because the children weren't in the US. And it wasn't until 2006 that US agents could actually go overseas and prosecute Americans who were engaging in this type of behavior. And then it also gave the US the ability to prosecute as if they'd committed the crime on US soil, which is huge, right?
Right.
The other issue is, if he wasn't finding American children, he would get pulled out. Like, they weren't, like, you know, the government didn't care. And I'm not a globalist. I don't believe in a global authority. I don't believe in a global government. I don't think that's a good thing. But if there's one thing that every country on the planet should come together on, it's this. In putting it to a stop.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so the movie follows Tim from, you know, opening up where he is working to capture a really gross looking pedophile, you know? Well, actually, let me rephrase that. This isn't where the movie opens. The movie opens with a family, a single father, a son, and a daughter, when a former beauty queen comes and offers his children modeling contracts, and he takes them to the photo shoot, and they tell him, oh, come back at 7, and he comes back and they're gone. And it's then revealed that the children have been sold into sex slavery. And you know, there's like, you know, I mean, it's heartbreaking. When that happens, and you know, it's super sad. And Jose Zynga plays Roberto, the dad, who he has been in a ton of movies. Like, he's one of those that guys.
Yeah.
Like, most recently, I think the biggest thing was like The Dark Tower. He was Dr. Hotchkiss. He's been in a ton of stuff. I thought he was in one of the Fast and Furious movies, but he wasn't. He was in Mission Impossible 3.
He's in Constantine.
Yep.
I mean, he's been in so many things.
He was the DE agent in Con Air. Anyway.
Yep.
But it's heartbreaking. It's so sad. Like, he plays this like amazingly, and it's like, what can you do to, you know, to find these kids? What can he do? He's in Colombia, you know. Corruption, things like that, like letting it happen. Who, like, I don't know. So from there, then it goes to Tim, they've got a bust going on, and they get this guy, and then Tim pretends to be a pedophile and gains this guy's trust, and he sets him up to meet a child trafficker, where they arrest him, the child trafficker, as he's bringing the boy into America. And it turns out it's the little boy from one of the two children from the beginning of the movie. And that's kind of where all of this kicks off, because it's a great scene. And the scene's been around, it's been on the internet for a while, where he's like, how many of you captured? And he's like, oh, as of now, we've captured like 288 pedophiles. And how many kids have you saved? None. And it's like, wow, that sucks.
Yeah.
And so that kicks off like Tim asking for permission to go to Colombia to try and find this little girl, because he promised the little boy. And you know, he uses his contacts there, and they meet with a former cartel accountant called Vampiro, where in real life Vampiro was called the Batman. And mm-hmm. I actually, real quick, there's a bunch of links at the bottom of the show notes after like who's in the movie and stuff. And maybe I'll move it to the top. I don't know. It's called source material, and there's a History versus Hollywood for The Sound of Freedom. And I highly, 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 highly recommend reading it. It is very good. And it's a great accounting of what actually happened versus what really happened. And you know, the movie was pretty close, to what happened. One of the things they left out, that Glenn Beck is the one in real life who raised funds so Tim Ballard could quit his job and go rescue children in Colombia.
Yeah, that was definitely news to me. So, and they said from a time standpoint, they kept that one out of the movie.
Yeah. Well, the time standpoint was also because he was working cases in Colombia and Tahiti at the same time, and they cut the Tahiti out and focused. But the other thing I just want to point out, this is one of the few instances where the real life like wife is much better looking than the movie wife. Not that Mira Sorvino is not beautiful. It's just Catherine Ballard's a looker. Woo.
Oh yeah.
So anyway, she kind of looks like Kaylee McEnany. Anyway, but yeah, so, you know, it's going through that, and he's trying to do this, and his job is to document these horrific scenes from the videos that they find. And, you know, so he makes his way down there, and they're going through everything and trying to figure out how to do this. And, you know, it ends up, he basically puts together a mini task force down there, and they start, you know, recruiting traffickers so that they can put them into a sting operation.
Yeah. They are basically creating an Epstein Island of their own.
Yes.
Because he sees a newspaper article or something about the hotel in Thailand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was shut down. Yeah.
That was shut down. That was very much like that. And that's what he says. Hey, he thinks about it. It's like, okay, this sounds crazy, but instead of, you know, trying to get these, you know, 10 or 12 kids, what if we can do more?
Right. And the other thing is like the woman who was part of the actual traffickers was a former Miss Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was real life too. Like this former Miss Columbia was the one who was who was trafficking these children, and it's so sick.
Yeah, I do remember, and not for this movie, but for several years, I've seen where how women are oftentimes used as lures for not just children, but you know, other women. You know, you're more likely as a woman to, you know, stop mm-hmm. and help another woman in need than you would be a man.
Right.
And it's really sad.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about this is sad, but then you have these people like her that are basically the, you know, the shiny hook for these little, poor little fish.
Yeah. Yeah, in real life, the character's name was Kelly Joanna Suarez, and she was Miss Cartagena.
Cartagena.
Thank you. Cartagena. And yeah, so she would pretend to be a model, to have a modeling agency, and she would lure these kids in. And, you know, it's just like, I will say, like, one, Bill Camp as Vampiro was amazing in this movie. He was so good. And the story that he told for what, like, led him to finally, like, you know, change his tune and start, you know,
going after these people, because what he was doing,
excuse me, he would buy these kids and then free them.
Yeah.
And yeah, have you ever seen Molly's Game?
I had never finished. Yeah, actually, I did. Yeah,
he's really good in Molly's Game. He's a like a gambling addict, and like he keeps coming back and back and back, and he like loses everything. I just was looking through his thing, and I really liked him in Molly's Game. But like how did these people like do this, right? Like, how do you act like this? You know, Kurt Fuller as Tim's commanding officer or whatever, who tries everything. He does everything he can to help, and he's just literally tied by U.S. law.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
And I think there's a line in the movie when they mention, and we know this from everything we've done and experienced in different parts of life, bureaucracy.
Yeah,
and that's what it ends. It's some of, and again, not with this. I think yes, there is bureaucracy, but then there also has to be a hunger, a burning desire to help these innocent victims, and sometimes you don't have that, unfortunately. And we'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. When we talk about some of the reactions to this movie that make me question the inner soul of some of these people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, this movie, like I said, was done 5 years ago. I guess Mel Gibson came on and did some editing work and, you know, obviously like endorsed the film, in a video and everything like that. And so, yeah, I think, actually, I don't want to really go too deep into it because I think you need to see this movie. I think us explaining this. So what he has to do, what he does to try and find the little girl, Rocia, and then what ends up happening to her and how he has to get her, that is not like, it's true that they were this brother and sister, but like what happens to Rocia is different in the movie. And, you know, it is very much, a thriller type thing. And, you know, I thought they did a really great job, like not over exaggerating. Like he didn't go in to this rebel encampment in the midst of the rainforest, like guns ablazing, like shooting everybody, like, you know, going full John Wick. It was much more cerebral than that. I think the other thing I really liked about this, well, two things I really liked about it. I liked the look. I liked the way they lit it. I liked how it was very like kind of dark when it needed to be dark. And then when it was light, it was like really harsh, like fluorescent light. Like it wasn't ever like until the end, it wasn't ever like a good light. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the other thing I really liked is the fact that like there are many times where the lack of music is so noticeable because that's like when these characters are at like their deepest point of despair.
Yeah. And then, I'll add to that.
Yeah.
I'll add to that. I like some of the facial shots, like those up close shots on some of these characters. Mm. Whether it be when Tim asks one of his contacts in Cartagena, it's like, what if this was your daughter? Mm-hmm. Versus when he asked the guy who had all the money to front this,
right?
You know, don't think of all the kids; just think of this woman, right. This little girl right here. Things like that. It was so, and or the shot where he's I mean, having to look at that stuff and document it, and then you, and that's early in the film, and you, and it's just like the top part of his face where you can pretty much see only his eyes. Mm-hmm. And it's such a heartbreaking thing that, you know, there are people that have to do, you know, have to do all of this stuff. But those are some of the shots that I really, it, that made it so personal. That's the other thing. It, that type of stuff makes it so more, much more personal, that it's like, if you can't find empathy, if you can't empathize with what's going on in the movie like this, then it just, not just the, and again, we're talking about, yes, the subject matter, one, that's number one, but also, like you said, the way it was shot, some of the lighting, the, you know, the camera angles, the acting, it's a tough movie that, yeah, that I'm not gonna sugarcoat it at all. It's a very tough watch. There, like you said, or like Brian said earlier, there, it is not gratuitous, it's not graphic at all. You know what happens, but you never see anything close to what happens. You see, you see the, you know, the preamble, so to speak, and that, that's hard enough,
right?
And like you said, that, that in a way, that makes it worse.
Yep.
But it's a tough, it's, and you know, somebody asked me, or Jess asked me, she said, you know, did you like it? And I said, it was powerful. And that's the best way I can describe a movie like this. Before we started recording, I mentioned to you, Brian, the only other movies I could think of that had this type of effect was Passion of the Christ and Schindler's List.
Right.
And now there might be some that I'm not thinking of. You mentioned Requiem for a Dream. I haven't seen that. Mm-hmm. But those are the type of movies that just really just gut punched me. And mm-hmm. it's been, again, I don't remember when Schindler's List came out, or, well, it's, I don't know 90s. If that came out. Yeah, that came out before Passion of the Christ. So whenever that was, 2004 or 5, that's the last time I, you know, yes, there's been movies that have affected me, but
yeah, 93.
I had to sit in my car. Man, 93. Wow. And I had to sit in my car for,
yeah,
for like 5 minutes
after 2004. So just a,
yeah,
heads up there. But
yeah, yeah, I had to sit in my car for 5 minutes just to, because, you know, every, again, there were two people, or, you know, I was in the middle of two couples, and I heard them both cry, like, both, you know, the women were the ones closest to me. I heard them sniffing half the movie.
So at the Passion, on one side of me was two nuns and a priest, and the other was a guy who was holding a rosary. And like, he cried the whole time. And then I wanted to talk to the nuns and the priest afterwards, and Angel wouldn't let me.
Why?
She was just like, just leave them alone. I'm like, why? They're going to be super happy if I come up and start asking them questions about this.
Yeah.
So, but
anyway. It was really tough. And that's how I would phrase this movie. Not as good, not as this amazing movie.
No.
And that's not to say that, like, from a standpoint of a how it was put together, we've just talked about it. We think it was put together very well. But that is secondary to the power. And again, they kind of work hand in hand, because if it was just horribly shot and just with no regard to anything, it would be better off as a documentary.
Right.
But as a movie, yes.
Which is a documentary coming out.
Yes. Do you know when, by chance?
No, I'm about to look it up.
But again, it's powerful. That is the best way to describe this movie. And I'll just leave it at powerful.
Yeah. I don't see it.
Is that the one by Mel Gibson?
It might be. Let's see. Anyway, we'll find it and we'll share it later. All right. So the other thing about this movie, which I agree, there's nothing groundbreaking about this movie, right?
No.
It's just the subject matter. But what's really interesting is the legacy media's response to this. So we've got some stories here we're going to go through from the Washington Post, the Guardian, Rolling Stone. There's a post on the Daily Truth Report, but it's about a CNN interview. And then something from Variety. So I picked all of these sources other than the Daily Truth Report, because these are all sources that we use when we talk about like news and what's happening in Hollywood. So I thought it was really important to look at how legacy media specifically is talking about this. So the Washington Post, the article, Sound of Freedom is a box office hit whose star embraces QAnon. I do believe by the time this movie was done, and I had to look this up because I don't know a lot about QAnon, right? But QAnon wasn't like a thing until after this movie had been completed. And yeah. I will say this. So this article is written by a man named Herb Schreibner, who is a breaking news reporter for features with the Washington Post. He previously worked with Axios. He writes about breaking news, politics, entertainment, and sports. And he was a Salt Lake City. He worked in Salt Lake City as an entertainment reporter and editor covering movies, blah, blah, blah. Dude, what are you doing here? Like, and then the other one is the other co-author, co-byline, is a guy named Will Sommer, who is conservative media and conspiracy theories. And I'm just going to say, the character that Tim is taking down at the beginning of the movie, like, Will Sommer gives off that vibe just by looking at him. And I am not going to mince words. So the people who are trying to like downplay this movie, they're trying to say this is a conservative conspiracy about what's happening in the world with children. This is not okay. Like you are trying to downplay. And these are people who are like, you know, like nobody on Epstein's list has been arrested yet.
None.
And these publications that we're all talking about are publications who are complicit in not getting that list made public. But he's talking about that, like, Caviezel, who says Ballard recruited him onto the film after seeing him in The Count of Monte Cristo and Mel Gibson's Passion, has espoused even more extreme theories. The actor appeared at a QAnon convention in Las Vegas in October 2021, giving a speech that quoted Mel Gibson's final speech in Braveheart and includes one of QAnon's main slogans, "The Storm is Upon Us," which refers to the movement's fight against the imagined pedophile cabal. What fucking imagined pedophile cabal are these douche fucks talking about?
Like I said, you can like or dislike the construction of a movie, but when you downplay the seriousness of something like this, I put you in the same category as the people that are perpetrating it, because you know why? You are running interference, which could best be used, instead of interfering, shining a fucking light on this. Like you said, not one person has been brought up in Epstein Island. Mm-hmm. Not one.
Not one.
Not one. And then people like this Summers and all these other people, you are the worst of the worst. Mm-hmm. And it's funny enough that I saw that video. And again, you might have already seen it before that I sent you. The one from David Icke, I think that's how you pronounce his name. This was from 1994,
right,
where he basically calls the media prostitutes. Mm-hmm. Because that's people like that harp on stuff like this, that spit out their talking points that are given to them from their masters behind the scenes.
Right.
That's all you are.
Yeah.
That's all you are.
Yep.
Like, you know, when we joke about, or we sort of joke about actors in Hollywood at whole being husks, that, you know, you just put whatever in and they act it out.
Right.
You all are worse than that. You all are far worse than that.
Yes. Well, I guess there's some stuff like the Washington Post might be found to be an accessory in some of the Hunter Biden stuff. So that's something we're going to have to follow closely over the next couple months. All right. But the next one. So The Guardian. Which is The Guardian, it's a rag. I like how they support The Guardian, fund independent journalism with $5 per month. This was Charles Bramsko. And this is Sound of Freedom, the QAnon adjacent thriller seducing America. Jim Caviezel stars as a hero trying to stop child traffickers in a paranoid new movie turning into a surprise box office hit. All right. There's nothing political about The Sound of Freedom. There's nothing political about it. There's not a political stance. They don't talk about a president. They don't talk about a congressperson. They talk about the fact that the law does not let them do what they want to do, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is fair. That is an accurate assessment of what's going on here. But these people, this Charles Bramsko, who is a film and television critic living in Brooklyn, who gave Insidious Red Door 1 star. He is, you know, like he's downplaying what is actually happening. And I'm going to assume none of these people have children. Because if you had children, you would not have this reaction.
Well, you would think, but there are also people that have children that perpetrate these crimes mm-hmm. too. So it's just an evilness. It's just a darkness in your soul. And the fact that the Guardian is, and I don't know if this is the same guy, so I'm not going to say he is, but the Guardian praised Cuties on Netflix that, let's be honest,
Rolling Stone did.
Sexualized. What'd you say?
It was Rolling Stone. Did Guardian do it? The Guardian do it too?
No, the Guardian did it too.
Oh, okay. Because the Rolling Stone, it said, they put out a tweet, like, and you can find this on Defiant Ills. It's right up near the top right now. Thanks to a major marketing mistake, the award-winning French movie Cuties was accused of sexualizing young girls. It's actually a sensitive portrait of growing pains that deserves to be seen. And that was on 9/9/20. And on 7/7/23, they have review, Sound of Freedom, the QAnon-tinged thriller about child trafficking is designed to appeal to the conscience of the conspiracy-addled boomer.
Okay, so Peter Bradshaw on September 14th, 2020, okay. Cuties review. Netflix's controversial child exploitation film is bold, flawed, and misunderstood.
Yeah, it also got a standing ovation at Cannes, where, again, a good portion of those people have been to Epstein's Island. Mm-hmm. And it's France. Need I say more? Anyway, all right. So Rolling Stone, The Sound of Freedom is a superhero movie for dads with brainworms. The QAnon-tinged thriller about child trafficking is designed to... Okay, there we go. Based on a true story I heard from somewhere across the theater, the familiar words had appeared on screen and an elderly man had taken upon himself to read it aloud to the rest of the sizable audience seated in... For a matinee showing the anti-child trafficking thriller Sound of Freedom, starring Jim Caviezel. For the seasoned moviegoer, the phrase is a joke. We know that cinema will stretch almost any truth to the breaking point, and the rank insincerity of such a pronouncement in the foundation of a prankish opening title of Fargo. But this crowd, I could tell, would view the events depicted over the next 2+ hours entirely literal. Again, I recommend you go to the link that has History versus Hollywood, because if anything, they undersold what they did. They undersold how many children they saved. They only did one of the two concurrent operations that kicked off the, the Underground Railroad thing that they have going on. We live in Cincinnati. We have the Underground Railroad Museum here, and it is not only dedicated to American slaves. There is a whole floor that is dedicated to trafficking human beings in modern age. This Miles Klee, let's see, who is Miles Klee? There's no picture. All right. Miles Klee, a culture writer for Rolling Stone, covering the weirder parts of the internet, from extreme fandoms and conspiracy theories to micro-celebrities and the latest viral memes. He's the author of a novel, Ivyland, and a story collection, True False. Miles is based in, Los Angeles. Like, these people, right? Obviously no children. And then the one that the next one is Rothschild begs Americans not to see a huge hit Sound of Freedom movie. So this was from Friday. CNN has this video. You can click on the link and there's a link to watch it. CNN recently had a segment trashing the new movie Sound of Freedom. On Friday night, CNN brought journalist Mike Rothschild, fun last name, in an attempt to stop people from watching the new movie. Rothschild told viewers the movie is made from QAnon concepts and moral panic. Again, when the movie was made, QAnon was not a thing. It appears CNN and Rothschild didn't want the general public to be informed about the sadistic crimes being committed against children every day. Watch it here, and there's a link. Why are they trying to stop this, Daryl?
There's only one reason, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There's only one reason you would try to stop. You wouldn't try to stop this, or you wouldn't shine a light on this. There's only one. Mm-hmm. There's nothing else.
Yeah.
These people are absolutely complicit with what's going on.
Yeah. And then Rebecca Rubin from Variety. Let's see. Rebecca Rubin is a film and media reporter covering box office, streaming services, and Hollywood studios at Variety. She previously served as a digital editor, as a digital news editor. She graduated from the University of Florida and lives in New York. And again, young woman in New York, no kids. But hers is actually a little more fair. How Jim Caviezel's faith-based Sound of Freedom becomes this summer's unlikely box office hit. Here's the thing. Faith is not a massive part of this movie. I'm really struggling to find where they keep talking about faith so much.
Yeah, and like I told you, like even reading it and listening, I didn't finish the interview, but listening to Ballard, him and Caviezel being interviewed, it was a big part of his life. Mm-hmm. There was no denying that, but the way they framed it in the movie, it wasn't this overarching thing of I have to do it because, I mean, there is a line where it was, I'm paraphrasing, something like when God tells you something, you don't hesitate.
Right.
But overall, you're absolutely right. It was not like it was this huge from the start.
Right.
Something about faith.
Well, in the whole God's children are not for sale. That is not an inherently religious line.
No. No, it's not.
And even if they're talking about that, there is no religion that they're actually talking about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do like how she pointed out that Brandon Purdy, the head of theatrical distribution from Angel Studios, thanked AMC, Cinemark, and Regal. Three of the biggest movie chains in the country for having the courage to release Sound of Freedom during the busiest movie season of the year. Honestly, I think they're just happy to have theaters that are full because my theater was completely full.
Yeah, well, I told you. I initially was going to do a 10:30 showing, and mm-hmm. I'm glad I looked last night because I just thought about everything I'm listening to about people getting these tickets. It's like, you know what? I might want to get my ticket. And I realized that 10:30 was 90% full. And so that's why I opted for the 9:25 show.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, but yeah, it's, you know, it's just like for everything she says here, like there's just kind of that backlash of faith-based. Mm-hmm. Like it's one of those weird Kirk Cameron films from years ago. The Left Behind movies, right? It's
the Left Behind, right? Books.
Those were super faith based. Was that about the rapture?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was a book series. Okay. From the 90s, I think.
Anyway,
because I remember reading some of them.
Yeah, I mean, of the two of us, like you were definitely the more religious one out of the two of us. Not that I want to out you or anything like that, but like I also have a very firm understanding about all of this because, you know, I have my sacrament punch card filled. You know, all I've got left is deathbed repentance, right? and then, you know, I went on my little, like in college, my religion tour to see, you know, what fit me and what didn't. And, you know, I did my work and my study and I went and talked to rabbis and imams and Zen centers and all that shit. And, you know, I came to my conclusion. That's a very personal thing for me. But, you know, at the end of the day, Like, I sit in this movie as a skeptic. I sit in this movie as a cynic. And this movie is super powerful in the way that it approached the topic of child trafficking. Hands down.
And this is the thing, reading some of these reviews, these people, you can tell when something affects somebody in their writing, good or bad.
Right.
Usually, like almost all the time. There is no type of emotional connection to the material here, which again makes me question. And again, like I said, the variety one, yes, there's some really cheap shots here about religion and all this stuff in that article. Mm-hmm. But I will give Rebecca credit because she does by far the best job of all these.
Yes.
Of talking about the movie and the subject matter versus the other people.
Right.
And there is some emotion I can see in her writing. The other ones, I don't, or the Rothschild guy when we saw the interview.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing. Nothing.
No. No, he's a human hating, American hating, you know, exactly what he is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. So what, I mean, what are you going to do? All right. Go see this movie. Just go see it. Yes. If you've listened to this point, please go to the show notes and read all of this for yourselves. Read the History Versus Hollywood. It is enlightening. There is an actual documentary with video footage of the raid on the island in the movie that's coming out. I think next year is what I remember, or later this year. But yeah, I mean, this is like, if you have teenage daughters, take them with you. Have that conversation with them. Look out for things that have been done to your car. Look out for people who are following you. You don't need to be paranoid. You just need to pay attention. Because I know, like, and mine does not. And when the last time we went on vacation to a major city and she kept walking 10 feet behind me and I kept like grabbing her and putting her in front of me. And I explained to her why. And, you know,
and while you can't do this with younger kids, because this is, again, this movie is PG-13, but it's just a heaviness that I'm not recommending taking younger kids.
No.
But to your point, you know, taking your teenage daughters to see this, you talk to your kids that are younger. When you, one of the first things you said, Brian, was situational awareness. Mm-hmm. And too often people don't have it. Adults don't have it. Because predators do what they do.
Right.
They look for, you know, like you were talking about, if you have somebody in front of you, you can watch them. But in the back, oh, this one is, again, this is, you go look at the animal kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
What do predators do? They look for the one outside of the pack or outside of the herd. They separate
the weakest from the herd.
Yes. That is predator behavior. So while you don't take your younger kids to see this, you definitely want to talk to them about being aware.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's, you know, that whole stranger danger thing. And
in the best way you can.
Yep.
100%. Because there are people out there like this, and no amount of kowtowing that the Rolling Stone or the Guardian does is going to cover up the fact that there are people out there like that. Many more people than we would like to.
Right. I mean,
if there were zero.
And this can happen to anyone. Like,
anyone, dudes, yes.
This can happen to you. Like,
yes.
You know, and again, do not be paranoid. Pay attention.
That's all. And then again, that's what people get the two confused. It's like, because people get, you know, anxious and have anxiety for the fact of all this stuff that happened. No, it's, look, the odds that it's going to happen might be low, but you know what's going to make the odds lower? When you pay attention, when you prepare. Mm-hmm. It's not that you're looking out for, you're just, like, again, I've had accidents averted because I was in the car paying attention at a stop sign or a red light, and I would have got rear-ended if I wasn't paying attention.
Right.
Same thing. Just pay attention.
Right.
Be aware. You know, don't go walking down the street, especially somewhere you don't know, on your phone.
I mean, we are on the bike path and we see people riding their bike looking at their phone.
Yeah. Pay attention. That's the biggest thing you can do for yourself.
Right.
You know, just, you know, if you're not training in, you know, weight training and martial arts mm-hmm. and all this stuff, just paying attention can do wonders for you. And that, like I said, the example I gave in a car, you know, no amount of martial arts training is going to help me in a car if I get rear-ended because I'm not paying attention, yeah. you know?
Yep.
It's just being that situational awareness. That's yeah. what I just want to preach to everybody.
Yeah.
Being aware.
Yeah. And I think that's a great note to end on. So thank you all for listening. Thank you. Hopefully you went and saw this movie. Hopefully you go and see this movie. If you do, please reach out. Let us know. Let us know what you thought. Let us yeah. know if you think we're off base. Let us know if, you know, this is something you agree on. Because I think, like, this is a cause that more people should be getting behind. Mm-hmm. And I know Jen and I are looking at, like, how can we, like, get involved? But no, I mean, but at the end of the day, the best way to fight this is awareness. The best way to fight this is to get involved and to keep an eye on your kids. And not helicopter them, not keep them from falling down, but to teach them to understand what harm really is and how to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. All right, enough preaching. Have a great day. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
See ya.
The Infamous Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. You can find new episodes every Sunday on Apple Podcast, YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcast, our website, or anywhere podcasts are downloaded. This show is hosted by Daryl Jasper and me, Brian Tudor. To find more information about the show, visit us at infamouspodcast.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Infamous Podcast to keep up with the show. We also have a Patreon page, patreon.com/infamouspodcast. We have some great rewards for our patrons and are looking for help to grow the show to bring you more of the content you want to hear. Music for this podcast is provided by Michael Henry from meetmichaelhenry.com. So, whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.